From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is Code of Honor on the outside. Vino Rosso, dead game at the rail. These two will decide a thrilling Jockey Club Gold Cup, and it is very close. It looked like Vino Rosso has edged out Code of Honor on the wire.
And Beau Recall in the center of the course. Mirth by 2.5. Beau Recall on the outside of Alesia's World, but they're only battling for second as Mirth makes every pole a winning one in the Rodeo Drive.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And these two lay it on the line with a 16th to go. A late on the inside. Midnight Bizou on the outside. They're coming to the wire. Who's it going to be? Oh, it's so close.
A furlong left to run in the Oaks. It's Chauncey and the hometown favorite Late Night Powwow running her down. Chauncey and Late Night Powwow slug it out. Here's Late Night Powwow alongside of Chauncey. Noses up and down. Late Night Powwow wins it for West Virginia.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning and welcome to the show that launched a network. This is the Equine Forum presented by Red Brand Fence on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Happy Breeders' Cup Day. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you from Santa Anita Park in Arcadia, California, where the Breeders' Cup has returned for a record 10th year here in 2019. Day one is in the books, and I'll tell you what happened there in just a minute. Five Breeders' Cup races. We had the coverage for you yesterday here on the network. Nine more coming up this afternoon, and it kicks off with the Filly and Mare Sprint at 11:55 a.m. Pacific time. That's 2:55 back in the east. Culminates with the $6 million Breeders' Cup Classic, 5:44 Pacific, 8:44 Eastern. And our coverage this afternoon comes your way from 3 to 9 p.m. Eastern. You can tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, affiliates across the country, and you can stream us worldwide at horseracingradio.net. That coverage presented by Visit Barbados and Red Brand Fence. The ultra-talented Sister Charlie is back to defend her title as the favorite in the Filly and Mare Turf. Then you have the ridiculously deep field and competitive field in the Breeders' Cup Sprint with Mitoli, Catalina Cruiser, Chancelot, Imperial Hint, and don't forget about Midnight Bisou, the top older filly in the country. She's looking to state her case for Horse of the Year honors in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. So storylines abound later today, and I'm going to cover all of them for you with our entire team later this afternoon at Santa Anita. This morning, you're going to hear from Hall of Fame jockey Lafitte Pinkeye Jr., one of the greatest of all time. He's won multiple Breeders' Cup races. He spent time with me looking back on some of his greatest wins, including a win in the first Breeders' Cup Classic ever held here at Santa Anita with Skywalker. That was an upset that day. Lafitte tells you all about it. You're going to hear from trainer Mark Cassie. You're going to hear from Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert. And you're going to hear my one-on-one interview with Jeff Bloom talking about Midnight Bisou, what this year has been like for him, for his family, for Bloom Racing, going down this road with the top filly in the country and maybe even a Horse of the Year candidate. You're going to hear all that. That's all ahead this morning on the Equine Forum, plus our Industry Star of the Week presented by Stuart Morris. Our poll question for this morning, you can go to @HRN on Twitter to weigh in, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. If you were only allowed to bet one Breeders' Cup race later today, which one are you choosing? You can only bet one. Which one are you going to choose? Let me know which race that is, and we'll try to pass those along later in the program. As for what happened on Friday, congratulations to all of these winners. The Juvenile Turf Sprint went to four-wheel drive. The son of Triple Crown winner American Pharoah for Wesley Ward and Erad Ortiz Jr. came back with the next race. That was the Juvenile Turf. It went to number two, Struck Door, for Chad Brown and Jose Ortiz. That was a really nice race, too. In the Juvenile Fillies, this may be outside of the Juvenile. Well, I guess you could call them co-races of the day. Dona Veloce gets the victory in there. Second in there behind British Idiom, who did get the victory. But the two of them were almost inseparable through the lane. It was a great stretch battle. You had number 11, Sharing, for Graham Motion, get the victory in the Juvenile Fillies Turf. The daughter of Shared Account and Spitestown. So there you go, another Breeders' Cup connection there. Manny Franco was aboard. And then in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, the huge upset with Storm the Court defeating Anador. Storm the Court, trained by Peter Urton, ridden by Flavian Pratt, and what a year it's been for him. That's what happened here yesterday. Plenty more to come here on Saturday afternoon, and plenty more to come here this morning on the Equine Forum. Stay with me. We'll get to the first break. Back with more right after this. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust Keep Safe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about Keep Safe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
Racing fans, don't miss the biggest day of the year, Breeders' Cup Classic Day at spectacular Santa Anita Park. Admission gates open on Saturday at 8 a.m. and first race post time for a tremendous 12-race card is at 10 o'clock. We'll have 9 Breeders' Cup races, including the $2 million distaff, and the day will reach a crescendo with the $6 million Breeders' Cup Classic. Come join us for a day you'll never forget. Walk-up general admission tickets are available for both the grandstand and infield, so don't miss out. Santa Anita, transforming tradition.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Mark your calendar for the Holiday Racing Festival at Penn National on Wednesday, November 27th. The card features 3 outstanding stakes races, the $200,000 Fabulous Strike Stakes, the $100,000 Swatara Stakes, and the $100,000 Blue Mountain Futurity. Plus, there's a special $3,500 holiday cash giveaway. First post is 6 p.m. Eastern, with the stakes included in the early pick 4, comprised of races 1 through 4. Go to hcpn.com for details and rules.
Get ready for the Thanksgiving holiday with a racing feast Wednesday, November 27th, featuring the $1 million Land of Enchantment Day at Zia Park with 7 stake races, headlined by the $250,000 Zia Park Derby and the $250,000 Zia Park Oaks. And remember to catch HRRN's special coverage of the Land of Enchantment Day Stakes live at 3 o'clock Eastern, November 27th on Sirius 219 and XM 201. For more information, go to ZiaParkCasino.com.
The Maryland thoroughbred industry. For over 200 years, the innovative leader. Maryland was the first to have organized racing in North America and the first to establish a state breeders association. Maryland created the first thoroughbred yearling show, the first state magazine, the first state breeder incentive development program, the first international race to feature horses from 4 continents, and the first $1 million one-day stallion stakes event. The Maryland thoroughbred industry is the innovative leader.
Introducing the Spendthrift Farm, an unparalleled class of new stallions entering stud in 2020, headlined by 4 Breeders' Cup hopefuls, sprint contender Mitoli.
Mitoli wins the run, Happy Met Mile!
Dirt Mile contenders Omaha Beach and Colefront.
Omaha Beach, yes!
Colefront wins it for the U.S.
And classic contender Vino Rosso.
Vino Rosso, fantastico!
Best of luck to all the connections in this year's Breeders' Cup, Spendthrift. The Breeders' Farm.
Hi, this is Shug McGahee, and I really enjoy listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And Turkoman is swinging 5 wide. He's picking them up one by one, and he's rolling now. But they have to catch Skywalker. He leads by 4 with a furlong to the wire. Precision at the second. Turkoman closing third. Skywalker is still there. And then it is Precision. Turkoman with 1 late move. But it is too late. And Skywalker, an upset winner with Pintai aboard to win the 3rd Breeders' Cup Classic. And the string of long shots continues. Turkoman was gallant. He was coming from far out of it, but he simply ran out of ground. And Pintai, the master aboard Skywalker, to win the 3rd Breeders' Cup Classic.
Well, who can forget that performance by Skywalker in the Breeders' Cup Classic? That was the first Breeders' Cup Classic held here at Santa Anita Park in Arcadia, California. Of course, the Breeders' Cup returning to Santa Anita here in 2019 and for a record 10th time. And nobody has been well, a bigger part of racing here at the Great Race Place than the great Lafitte Pinkei Jr. Of course, retired with more than 9,500 career victories, seven of those coming in the Breeders' Cup. And Lafitte, we're sitting here at Clocker's Corner this morning. The San Gabriels in the distance, they look just spectacular today. And, boy, what a morning, huh?
That's right. This is San. I love San Anita. It was, it's one of the best, most beautiful track in the country. And I really enjoy myself riding over here and competing. And, you know, even coming up this morning, it brings me a lot of good memories.
You walk through the crowd here at Clocker's Corner, and there's racing fans, there's media members, there's horsemen. You couldn't take two steps without taking a picture, shaking hands, giving hugs to somebody. What's that like when you come back here?
Yeah, it's nice, you know, but I love the fan too. You know, we depend on them, and it's nice to show up and greet everybody, and everybody come up to me and being very nice. You know, it's a lot of fun.
We just heard the clip of Skywalker winning the Classic here, that third Breeders' Cup ever held. It was 1986, and you also won the Juvenile that year with Capote. What do you remember when you think back to that day?
Well, it was, I thought I had some good mounts that day. I think I rode about maybe three or four horses. Capote had a good chance. I knew if I could control him a little bit in the first turn because he had a tendency to get out. And he will be tough to beat, which I did. You know, I got into work one morning, and he worked very good. I love his work, and I think that day I remember it was really dark. I had never worked a horse so early in the morning, and I could barely see. You know, but he worked fantastic, and really like his chances. And coming down the stretch, I knew he'll win. And, of course, Cordero was in a horse called Gorge that day that he was the horse to beat. And that day I beat him easy, you know. So, and then it came the race for the Classic. And, you know, I thought Skywalker had a good chance. It was a very tough race, though. There were some tough horses in the race. And Turkoman and the horse Chris McCarron rode. Horse from Fred Hooper.
Yeah,
I can't remember his name right now, and he was a very tough horse too. And actually, the trainer gave me a really good instruction. He said to me, "Well, he probably seen the horse more than I did in the morning working and everything. And I rode him before, but I went into the race just hoping that he run a good race because, like I said, it was a tough race, and the trainer said to me, "Listen, when this horse wants to run, don't wait with him. Just go, you know, just go." And I said, "Okay." So sure enough, at the half a mile pole, I'm laying about second, I think, and he wanted to go, and I thought it was too early. So that's one of those moment where you are thinking to yourself, "What should I do? Should I go?" Because that wasn't my style. My style wasn't moving too early on a horse. So I said, "Should I wait or should I go?" And he wanted to go. I said, "Well, you know, I'm going to follow instruction today." So I decided to go with him, and he went on, you know, and that probably made me win the race.
Yeah, you made the right decision.
Yes, because Turkoman was flying at the end.
Yeah, did you know he was coming?
You know what? I was looking at a wire. I was just trying to make my horse keep going, which he was running pretty good. It wasn't like he was stopping. But after I saw the rerun, I saw that Turkoman finished very, very fast. But anyway, it was a great day because the owners were very good friends of mine. And I remember that they used to take my son all over the United States, take him to Texas, take him here, take him there, you know, and we were very close, and it was just a great day for me.
The Breeders' Cup came back here in 1993, and we'll talk about some of your other Breeders' Cup victories too, but focus on the ones here at Santa Anita. Came back here in 1993, and there was a horse by the name of Phone Chatter that you rode in the Juvenile Fillies.
Yeah.
That field was loaded. Sardula was second. You had Heavenly Prize, who came from the East Coast, that finished third in that race. That was a loaded race, and Phone Chatter able to get the victory.
Yes, that's right. I tell you, I went into the race thinking that I had the best horse. I thought Phone Chatter would win that race very easily, or she will be comfortable. And but what happened in the first turn, I clipped heel in the first turn to a horse that had no chance in the race. The horse was laying close, and then he back up right in my horse's face, and I had to check. Excuse me. Right after that, Fonchar started to get out. And I'm telling you, she never done that before. In my opinion, she got hurt in that race. And coming down the stretch, she was trying really hard to get out. Yeah. And I had to spend a lot of strength trying to keep it from getting out. And believe me, it was such a good effort for her because she ended up winning by head, beating a really tough filly, Sardula, no?
Yeah.
Sure. So after the race, you know, I was surprised that she did that. And then I think after that, she ran one more time, I think, and yeah. She did the same thing. And I don't know if she won. I don't remember if she won or finished second, but I don't think after that she ran again. But there is my opinion that she got hurt in that Breeders' Cup race, and she still won.
Yeah, she still won. She was all heart.
Yes,
all heart. When you get on a horse like that, that just gives their all, and they're going to win no matter what.
Yes,
what's that like?
Oh, it's great to ride those types. Yeah. You know, and I rode a lot of them in that way, where some of them they were like you could tell that they were arthritis or whatever was bothering them. They still went out there and run their heart out and won. You know, and you know. Those horses, they really impress you, and of course that the trainers, they know what they're doing too, and it's just a combination, you know, the training the horse and sometimes the jockeys too, influence in winning a race.
Visiting with Hall of Fame jockey Lafitte Pinkai Jr. here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, what other Breeders' Cup memories stand out to you when you think about all the other Breeders' Cups that you were able to compete in?
Well, I remember when I won on Tasso.
Yeah.
Tasso was a horse that I think his best race was a mile race. And I thought he had a chance. And there was a horse in the race that Chris McCarron rode that I knew he might be the horse to beat. And don't remember his name right now. But coming down the stretch, Tasso was gaining ground very little by little.
Yep.
And I remember that after we crossed the wire, I thought I won, but I lost a big neck. And when I came back, they took a long time, and I said, how can that be? I think I won by a big neck. How can I? And they took the longest time for that photo to come up. And finally, I started to doubting myself. I said, I probably got bit, you know? But sometimes the angle... It's different, you know, when you're, because he was in the rail, I was in the more than in the middle of the track. So they kept waiting for the photo, and they finally hung up my photo in front, and I was so relieved, you know. And I tell you, that's one of the closest noses that I won a race by, you know, but it was a great day, you know, I wish it wouldn't have been so close and suffer me, because I was suffering the winner's circle after a while.
Yeah.
I mean, in the waiting for walking around the winner's circle and waiting for the photo to come up. And finally, when they came up, you know, it was a relief.
Nobody was more disciplined as a rider than Lafitte Pinkai Jr. You dedicated yourself to this profession, and it obviously paid off for you. When you approached a big race like a Breeders' Cup race, What was your mentality, your mindset, and how did you get yourself ready?
Well, you try to be in as best shape as you can. You know, you don't want to blame yourself. You know, you're trying to do the best thing, ride the best race, ride everything. You know, those races bring the best in you, and you want to be in the very best that you can be. You know, and I feel good doing that, because I try to be my very best every day. But in those type of races, it's so much prestige, you know, and it's so much pressure and everybody involved, you know, and that race a lot of time depends whether the horse is going to be horse of the year or not,
yep.
Or filly of the year or not, and it's a lot of pressure for everybody, you know.
Did you feel the pressure?
Oh, yeah, of course. You feel the pressure of once. I'm telling you, you know, you feel the pressure. You want everything to go right. But you try to keep calm, too, you know, and we get used to that. And that's why we athletes, you know, we can stand the pressure. We can, and actually we like the pressure, you know. Yeah. We like to feel that way, that, you know, that it's weird, but it's a feeling that, you know, it's nice to be involved. You know what I mean? You know it's going to be some pressure, but you want to be involved.
Like a basketball player who wants the ball in his hands for the final shot of the game.
Exactly. You know, of course he's going to have some pressure. Anybody say, you know, like the people that play golf, they said, oh, I'm having fun. I said, fun? Are you kidding, having fun over there? Yeah, fun when you are in front by seven shots, you know. But if you are fighting for it, you are having no fun. You feel the pressure. You wanted to win, you know. Same thing like when a jockey is trying to be a lean rider. A jockey is trying to be a lean rider. You feel the pressure. You want to win. You know, you want to ride every horse so good, you know, especially when the last few days. And you like it. You like that. I love that feeling, that the pressure of trying to be out there and trying to be a lean rider. And you know, and if you win, and boy, you feel so good. And if you get beat, you don't feel so good. But at least you know that you did your very best. And you can congratulate the jockey that beat you because you know that he did a good job, you know?
There will be jockeys in the Breeders' Cup this year riding in the Breeders' Cup for the very first time. So they're going to experience that pressure for the first time.
Yeah.
If you have a young jockey that comes to you and says, Lafitte, what advice do you have for me? How do I handle myself coming up to the Breeders' Cup? What do you tell him?
You know, I will tell you, just go in the race and try to win the race. If you are in good shape, your body will take the pressure, or your brain is going to take the pressure. You know, if you are in good shape, you're going to be out there and you're going to act good. You're going to do a good job, you know. All is about being in good shape.
There are some great veteran riders in the Breeders' Cup this year, too. A name like Mike Smith comes to mind, but there are several. What separates a really good rider from a great rider?
You know what? That's so hard to say, you know, because, you know, I saw so many good riders that never really got to the top, like Mike Smith or Chris McCarron or Gary Stevens and Shoemaker, Cordero. And they have so much potential, but they never made it. You know, they never did anything spectacular like these guys did, you know. And I don't know why, you know, to tell you the truth. And even myself, you know, I didn't think I was better than this guy, but I was always competing with them, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know what was it that made me compete with these guys. And I'm beating them, you know? And I don't know. I don't know if it's mentally or physically. You know, I couldn't give you an answer, you know?
Yeah,
I
it's an X really, factor. There's something there that's intangible,
definitely.
Maybe, that you
definitely.
Can't.
Definitely. I mean, you see a guy like Shoemaker, such a little tiny guy. Yes, he has so much good feeling with the horses, and horses run for him, you know, and a different style. And then you get a guy like Sandy Holly, that different style, like to be outside, but he won races like crazy.
Yep.
And then you see a guy like... a guy like Cordero, you couldn't even you expect it of him because he looked so good on the horses and he did everything right, you know. But there were so many others that I saw that I'm like, why this guy don't ever make it to the top, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of riders that I tell you, they were great riders that in my opinion, and nobody ever mentioned him. And like a guy like Akash Asmussen. I think he's one of the best riders that this country ever had, you know, and you never hear about him. And the way he used to ride in those big races in France and all those places, you know, he was amazing, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard interviews with great golfers like Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus, and they'll talk about remembering the greatest shot that they ever hit, and it's just the most pure shot, whatever it might be. For you, 9,500 career victories. What's the greatest ride, in your opinion, that Lafitte Pincai Jr. ever put on a horse?
Wow. Well, I tell you, one of the best rides that I ever, that I ever rode a horse with the pressure and everything, because it meant so much, is when I rode a firm against a Spectacular Beat in the Jockey Club Gold Cup.
Yep.
And Shoemaker was so pressure because we represented the West, and Spectacular Beat was the East, you know. And then Shoemaker, which has been my rival for all those years, and it was like the East against the West.
Yep.
And the paper were going crazy, you know. So I felt the pressure that day. I think I felt more pressure that day that I never had my any other race. And I ended up running a good race, you know. And if I didn't ride that race, I would have got beat,
yep.
You know. So, you know, it was one of those things that after the race, I was very happy and relieved because the horse won. And it was fun after that.
It wasn't fun going into it, though.
Not really.
There's a whole generation of people listening to this show right now that never had the privilege to watch you ride or to watch Bill Shoemaker ride. What made Bill Shoemaker so good?
Well, like I say, he had a good head and good hand, and for his size, he kept himself in good shape. He was in good shape, you know. Whereas he got older, you know, you tend to lose your ability a little bit and your tenacity. I think you don't take as many chances. You take care of yourself more, you know, because like with me, in my later years, I was worrying not about getting hurt because of getting hurt. It's about losing mounts.
Yeah.
You know, with me, I was riding still good horses, and I didn't want to be off, because when you off, you lose all your good mounts, you know. But he was tough. He was tough to beat, and of course, if you are tough and you're riding the best horses, you're even tougher.
Right.
It's like me, you know. I knew I could ride, and I was riding the best horses in Santa Anita for a long, long time, and I was tough to beat, you know. And I kept myself in good shape. And I love it, you know. I love to show up every day and trying to win some races. And I'll win 3 or 4 races, and I wanted to win 5. If I win 3 or 4 races and one got beat a nose, I'm thinking about the one that I got beat a nose. What did I do wrong with that son of a gun that I know I could have won with him, you know? But it was good, you know, good career. You know, I suffered a lot because I was fighting weight all the time. And believe me, a lot of time I got up in the morning. I didn't want to get up.
Really?
And it was tough for me to get up because I was so, especially like if I was in a slump. When you are in a slump and things are not going good for you, you are drained out because you're trying hard, nothing works, you know. You tend to get down on yourself, you know, but you have to keep going. You have to have the hope that things are going to change, and you just keep trying, you know. You just got to keep trying. That's the only time you lose is when you quit, is my opinion. So there were some dark times when I wasn't winning races, and I said, guys, why things are this way, you know. Of course, I knew that I wasn't riding as well, and I wasn't riding as good horses, but I kept hoping that things change, you know. I kept trying, you know, and pretty soon things start changing again. I start winning again, and I think that's because I get concentrated. What am I doing wrong? What am I doing wrong? And then finally, I decided to change my diet. I start eating better. Start eating more good food, you know, healthy food, you know, and my career took off again.
Do you ever miss being on the back of a horse competing out there?
No anymore.
No.
No, after I retired, it was very, very difficult, very hard for me. I would say the first 2 years, you know, it was tough because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know anything else to do, you know, and I actually didn't want to do anything else.
Yeah.
But finally I got used to it. I started going out and enjoying myself, and don't worry about eating, and and but I still took care of myself. I still went to the gym and tried to eat healthy. And pretty soon, you know, your body changed, and I start gaining a little more weight and start feeling better, you know. Yeah.
And you're still around the game today. You're still working with PDJF, right?
Well,
in terms of being around for those events and helping out. And,
oh, definitely. Yeah. I still do something for the PDJF, you know. I go to the meeting they have once in a while. And, and it's fun. I have a lot of fun doing that because I get to see all my friends and have a drink with them and reminisce in the old time and joke around, you know, and it's nice, you know, it's nice to see all those guys.
Lafitte, we could spend all day sitting here talking about your career, but I know you have things to get to. Thank you so much.
You're
all class, and really appreciate it. Enjoy the Breeders' Cup.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you.
That is Hall of Famer Lafitte Pinkei Jr. taking some time to visit with me at Clocker's Corner, and one of the true good guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing, and some amazing stories there looking back on some of the top moments in what was a brilliant riding career. And it's great to see Lafitte out here and taking his curtain calls still, even to this day. All right, when I come back, you're going to hear from Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert as he looks ahead to this afternoon's Breeders' Cup Classic. He took the time earlier this week to visit with Bobby Newman and Megan Devine on our Breeders' Cup Countdown show. That's next, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus
Shortly
store
before 4 p.m.
Lexington.
On October 18, 1952, seven thoroughbreds from around the world answered the call to post for the first ever Laurel International at Laurel Racecourse in suburban Washington, D.C. And there was a solid, noteworthy feel on hand to contend for the top honors. Niederlander from Germany had Obi Skurlock in the irons, and he came into the race as the winner of the German Derby of 1950. Indian Hemp from Canada was the only three-year-old in the race, and was therefore in the receipt of 6 pounds from the others while having the services of the redoubtable Johnny Longden in the irons. Will Win, an English Invader by Pink Flower out of Saracen by Donatel II, was to be ridden by Emmanuel Mercer. Zucchero, another English Invader, piloted by Cheeky Charlie Smith. Rui from America, and the most highly regarded of the three American horses in the field, had the services of Johnny Adams. Greek Ship from the Brookmead stable had Heady Eddie Arcaro up. Palater, the pride of Maryland, was the third American entry. John D. Shapiro, the Laurel president who dreamed of the actuality of the race, was about to see his dream unfold. At the start, which went off without a hitch, Zucchero went to the front, but rider Charlie Smith took him back off the pace, allowing Indian Hemp, the Canadian three-year-old, to go to the front to set the fractions for the first half mile. Johnny Longden, born in Canada and aboard the Canadian Vader, was a noted master at controlling the pace of a race on the front end. And as they went past the half, Greek Ship moved up along the fence to take the lead, and the German champion Niederlander moved with him on the outside to make it a troika up front, dueling for control. Then Greek Ship and Niederlander pulled away from Indian Hemp, and those two were heads apart going to the far turn, matching powerful strides. Greek Ship was the first to give way while the rest of the field began to close ground and bunch up as they swung around the turn in what was rapidly becoming a superb horse race. Zucchero and Will Win were moving fastest of all as they came to the top of the stretch, where the cagey Englishman, Emmanuel Mercer, got Will Win down along the inside to save ground to get to the front. As they came pounding down the lane, the Hasty House Farms Rui, one of the American entrants, came flying down the middle of the racetrack with a wily veteran Adams putting all his skills to use to get the last possible ounce of run out of his mount. It was too little, too late. Wilwin crossed the wire, a two-length winner, Rui second, Zucchero third, then came Niederlander, Pallaster, Greek Ship, and the fully spent early pace setter Indian Hemp. Arcaro, who rode Greek Ship, said after the race, quote, "No excuses, those other horses just ran on by me too fast. I'd have given my right arm to win this race, but my mount ran one of his poorest races," unquote. Manny Mercer, the winning rider, was beside himself when he leaped off to hug his mount in the winner's circle. He had ridden a perfect race, keeping his mount off the pace in sixth place in the early going, allowing the early speed to kill each other off, then deftly driving through along the fence, turning for home. During the presentation ceremony, Will Wynn was accorded a huge ovation by the crowd, and that cheering continued on in a great display of international sportsmanship. That October day in 1952 at Laurel in Maryland, and the running of the very first international, indeed a great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Experience the thrill of pulse-pounding thoroughbred racing at the Maryland Jockey Club at Laurel Park. Step outside to a front-row seat for world-class racing or enjoy the view from towering windows in a gorgeous space. What better way to spend an afternoon than with friends, a craft beer, local cuisine, and a winning ticket? Play it safe on a favorite or take a chance on a long shot. Odds are you'll have a fabulous time. Live racing Friday through Sunday. Post time, 1:10 p.m.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, can you explain how the claims process works? Knock on wood, I haven't experienced a claim recently and hope I never will, but what happens?
Well, Mike, after we are notified by the insured of an accident or event, we will submit a claim report to the company, giving basic details of the claim. A claims representative will then contact the insured to walk them through the claim settlement process. Most claims are settled promptly, efficiently, and to the complete satisfaction of the insured.
Well, that sounds fair.
Basically, the insured is buying an insurance policy, which is a promise to pay in the event of a covered claim. It also provides peace of mind absent of a claim. That's the way it works.
Thanks, Joe. For all your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
Hi, I'm Kieran McLaughlin. I'm so hot at this meet because I listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Top of the lane now in the big one, and Bayern goes for home. Toast of New York, California Chrome on the grandstand side. Bayern digs in at the rail. Toast of New York stretching him every yard of the way. California Chrome, what a memorable Breeders' Cup Classic. It's a race for the ages. Bayern, Toast of New York, California Chrome, Bayern, Toast of New York, Bayern has won it. Bayern got there by a head under Martin Garcia over Toast of New York. California Chrome ran his heart out, but had to settle for a close third.
Bayern with a controversial victory in the 2014 running of the Breeders' Cup Classic at Santa Anita. One of three Breeders' Cup Classic winners trained by Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. That is the most of any trainer in the history of the Breeders' Cup Classic. And you'll hear from Bob talking about this year's entrant McKenzie coming up here in just a few minutes. He did join Bobby Newman and Megan Devine earlier this week on our Breeders' Cup Countdown programs. If you missed any of those shows, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and be sure to check out
the podcast at your leisure. Don't forget, too, to join us this afternoon beginning at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, for 6 straight hours of Breeders' Cup Saturday coverage here on HRRN. You can tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, and on affiliates across the country. And, of course, if you can't do that, you can always stream us worldwide on your phone or your mobile device at horseracingradio.net. Well, Bob does send out McKenzie in the Classic. He is the morning line favorite later this afternoon. Also has an entrant in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile later today. And as I mentioned, he talked with Bobby Newman and Megan Devine on our Breeders' Cup Countdown show earlier this week. And Megan started by talking to him about that Dirt Mile.
Improbable in the Dirt Mile. His Achilles heel has been the starting gate, and it seems like this has become kind of a little bit of an issue for him again. How do you as a trainer approach an issue like that? What do you do for him to try to help resolve it?
He's never been an issue here in California. Mm-hmm. He started at Oaklawn Park. He did it. He did it at Pimlico. And
he's an issue every time I bet on him.
And at Parks. And,
I'll tell you that.
And the last time he did, you know, at Parks, everything would have been really gone smooth for him. They loaded the last horse. They were ready to go. And the starter, for some reason, he hesitated. And then a horse false broke. Mm. You know, there was, what, 6 horses in there? Mm-hmm. And I felt like I was back at a quarter horse race. You know, if you leave him in there too long,
right,
you know, they're going to...
It's a domino effect.
Somebody's going to blow. So one horse blew, and then he sort of... He doesn't really... He's not bad in there. He just rears up.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was good, and then, all right, let's go. And he hesitated again, and then all of a sudden he moved, and then he opened the gate, and so we got left, and Jimmy, I remember Jimmy calling me, my assistant. He says, "Bob, I don't know. Don't be sending me on the road with this horse anymore." You know, but you know, it's a shame because I really think he could have won that race. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he's got a lot of speed. But you know, we got Rafael Bejarano. He's been working him really nice, and you know, Ralph, he's not known to be like a super gate rider, but I think you know, we have a fantastic gate crew here.
Because, absolutely.
You know, a great starter, gate crew, and I think that he'll be fine here.
Mm-hmm.
Talking with Bob Baffert, he's got 4 Breeders' Cup runners Friday and Saturday. Maybe no more anticipation than the Breeders' Cup Classic, where he's going to send out the morning line favorite, McKenzie, who is coming off a surprising defeat in his last race.
He did very surprising.
the bettors were surprised. The trainer was surprised. He was 1-5 in the race, and he didn't run a poor race. He ran second, but nonetheless, he didn't win at odds of 1-5. Joel Rosario is going to pick up the mount for the first time. What have you seen since McKenzie since that race, and what do you expect him to do differently this Saturday?
Well, I think, you know, he's really worked well coming up to this race. He looks great. His coat is, he couldn't look better, and he just needs to get away from the gate. And you know he's got to be put into the race first, and then after that, then it can shake out what you want to do with him. But you know, last time he broke, he was there, and all of a sudden, he just took him back and eased him off, and then he moved up again, and then. I think I told him, you know, don't, you know, I don't have like super duper, you know, I'm waiting for the next race, so don't let him do too much. Like what I meant, don't do extra, you know, don't make mm-hmm. him do more than he has to do. And I think he took it like, oh, just go easy on him, you know, but it's just frustrating. And this horse is, and the only reason I made the move is that horse has not won a race here with Mike at this meet.
Mm.
There's always something, you know, maybe, you know, and I always hear, well, he can't go that far, whatever. I know he can go that far. Mm-hmm. I've had horses. I've won this race with horses that couldn't go that far. Pace makes the race. So I was frustrated, and I made the move, but I've done that move before, and it's worked, and sometimes it doesn't work. When I told Mike, well, maybe watch him come and beat me with Yoshida, you know.
Well, he's going to try.
Right?
He's definitely going to try.
Those guys, they ride much better.
Nipping at your heels last year.
When they're a long shot and they've been taken, they ride much better the next time, you know. So it's different when you're 10 to 1.
It's storied that this horse, the name comes from your good friend Brad McKenzie. For our listeners out there that aren't familiar with the story, can you kind of give a quick background on where the name McKenzie comes from and how much this horse has meant to you?
Yes, you know what? And I think that probably adds the first. I want this horse to do so well. His mother watches this, and we all
Brad
love
McKenzie's
this horse.
Brad McKenzie's mother.
Brad McKenzie, yeah, Gene. Mm-hmm. And this horse sort of keeps her going. You know, she keeps telling me. She'd gotten hurt. She fell down or something. And says, the only thing that keeps me alive is thinking about this horse. Because, you know, you think about Brad. Everybody talks about Brad, and he's got a huge fan base. But the I just feel that the you know, this horse, you know, he deserves to win a race like this. It would just be incredible. You know, I really thought I was going to win the Kentucky Derby with him earlier in the year, and then he got hurt. But I think it was a blessing in disguise because he was not going to beat that big red horse, Justify. So, you know, I think everything works out for a reason. And so maybe this is it. You know, I go by my gut feeling. Maybe, you know, Brad somehow says, Rider switch, you know, in my mind. So we'll see what happens.
I'm sure Mike is really buying that one there.
But you know what? I love Mike. Mike is, but you know, Mike, one thing about it, I told Mike, you know what, Mike? You know, if you would have come in the next day and talked to me, I might have been all right, Mike. You know, but Mike said, all right, like, just don't take me off it. Don't take me off the team, you know. Mm. Don't take me off the roster. Mm-hmm. Find me another one. So I said, we'll find you another one. But, it's one of those things. He's actually cashed in on a lot of guys that I took off and put him on. So that's just the way it works.
Good luck to all four. They all, on paper, look like they have big, big shots. And it sounds like you're happy with the way all four of them are coming into the race.
Yeah, they all look great. My posts, I couldn't have been happier with my posts. I can't believe I didn't draw the one hole with any of them. I've been on a one hole roll all year long, so maybe
every year.
Maybe something. Maybe the stars are lining.
Ever since looking at Lucky, way back when.
I know it. I have, you know, four chances to win. You know, usually that means you'll be lucky if you can win one. I just hope we can at least win one. You know, and or I'd like to win all of them, but it's tough. But you know what? It's exciting. It's here at San Diego. It's so beautiful here, and we get to show off this beautiful racetrack. And you know, with all the negative publicity we've gotten, it's, you know, they're going to see, hey, you know what, this is still the best venue to have a Breeders' Cup at. And you look around and, you know, the mountains and everything.
It's the great race place.
It's the great race place, and we just got to, you know, we just got to get it back going again.
Well, Bob may be referring to a couple of things there. Certainly the Breeders' Cup Classic, trying to get it back going again. You remember he won the race three consecutive years, 2014, 15, and 16. Then 17 came Gunrunner with Steve Asmussen. And in 2018, it was Accelerate and John Sadler who got the victory. So Bob looking to get back to the Breeders' Cup Classic winner's circle and add to his record total in the race, and maybe also talking about getting the great race place back going again after some of the controversy that has happened throughout the previous few months at Santa Anita. But we'll see. We'll see if Bob can pull it off. Later today, McKenzie facing a tough challenge in that Breeders' Cup Classic. Going to come back with our Industry Star of the Week segment presented by Stuart Morris right after this on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Breeders' Cup.
Tappert is still there. Master Plan is gaining. Master Plan at Tappert. Tappert still in front. Master Plan too late. Tappert will do it.
Passion.
It's Tappert. He makes another step forward on his way to Churchill. Well done, young man. We'll report home four lengths to the good.
Performance.
Tappert has taken the lead. Tappert and Irish Warcry come down to the line together. It is Tappert and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Gainsway stallion Tappert, a $1.2 million yearling turned classic winner and millionaire. Following a precocious stakes-winning two-year-old campaign, Tappert set a new stakes record in the Grade 2 Tampa Bay Derby before capturing the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes in his three-year-old season. Among the best bred sons of Tappert ever to enter stud. Out of Grade 1 Spinaway Stakes winner and multiple Graded Stakes producer, Appealing Zofie. Tappert, standing for $12,500 at Gainsway.
Power. Passion, performance, you know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Recognized for raising and selling racehorses, Millridge has raised or sold 8 Breeders' Cup winners since 2000, including Oscar Performance, who is in his second year at stud at Millridge. Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 34 Grade 1 winners. That's nearly 2 per year for 18 years. Their consignment at Keeneland November includes broodmare offerings from Judmont Farms and their great female families, along with leading breeder George Strawbridge and his foundation-building families, all selling without reserve. Millridge, raising and selling racehorses.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Nyquist keeps striding forward in the final furlong. He has taken the lead. Swipe moves up behind him toward the outside. Late run from Brody's Cause, but still fifth. It's Nyquist with the lead. Nyquist in front, chased by Swipe. Nyquist to take it.
Nyquist capped off that undefeated two-year-old campaign in 2015 by winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and went on to capture the Kentucky Derby, becoming the only champion two-year-old to stay undefeated through the Derby since Seattle Slough. And that winning effort makes Nyquist your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Nyquist, the leading first crop sire at the yearling sales in 2019 by both average and median. His first juveniles will race in 2020. Learn more about Nyquist and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Songbird and Beholder, and they're into the stretch, and here we go. Songbird, sit down. Beholder is alongside. Forever Unbridled is 2.5 lengths behind them. Furlong to run. Songbird, Beholder, they are nose to nose. This race living up to its expected power as they come to the wire. They're nose to the front. Final time was 1 minute 49.20 seconds. I believe Beholder did it.
What a moment that was in Breeders' Cup history. Beholder winning the 2016 Breeders' Cup Distaff. There were many brilliant performances in her career. That was among the tops. As she gets the victory that day here at the foothills of the San Gabriel Mountains in Arcadia, California at Santa Anita. Welcome back to the Equine Forum presented by Red Brand Fence. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, continuing to look ahead to Breeders' Cup Saturday this morning. And time now for your Industry Star of the Week segment presented every single Saturday by our good friend Stuart Morris. And I tell you all the time that Stuart offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. His success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. Visit Stuart Morris and his consignment at all the major sales. Well, I thought it was appropriate this week to turn our attention to one of the unsung heroes in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Let's face it, that's what this segment is really designed to be about, to shine the spotlight on people that work very hard every day in our profession. And quite frankly, the sport wouldn't be possible without their contributions. Well, one of those people is Janine Painter, who works with Richard Mandela She does an awful lot. She's a freelance exercise rider, and she was a jockey for some time too. But she's been working with Richard since 1998. They've made quite a team and had a lot of success over the years. And here's Janine Painter, this week's Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. All right, Janine, let's talk about your involvement in the sport. I mentioned that you were one of the finalists for the Godolphin Awards in the dedication to racing category. I happened to be one of the judges there, and I was so captivated by your story. I said, this is our Industry Star of the Week for this Saturday morning. So first of all, congratulations on that, and congratulations on being one of the finalists in Godolphin Awards.
Thank you very much. It was quite an honor to be there, and just to even be recognized was an honor itself.
You've had the privilege of being around so many good horses in the Mandela Barn, but let's talk about you for a minute. Where did this love of horse racing begin for Janine Painter?
Back when I was a little kid, my dad and I used to go horseback riding when I was 3 and 4 years old. And like I've said before, I could ride a horse before I could ride a bicycle. So I've just always loved it. I always loved to go fast. So it just kind of came naturally. As soon as my parents took me to the races, I wanted to be a jockey. So that was what I did.
Talk about what this job entails, working around the barn here with Richard. And he's always said that he'd be lost without you. That has to be pretty special.
It's pretty intense. The most important part is the horses. That is the priority of every day that we come here, is that we do the best we can for the horses. It's not about us. It's not about our egos. It's about the horses and winning races, of course, but mostly to take care of the horses.
So what's a typical day like for you?
I usually get up around 3, have some coffee, and then head over here. I'm usually here by 4 o'clock. Kind of walk through the barn when it's quiet, make sure everybody's still happy in their stalls, and I don't know, usually go look at the set list at the board and what we got to get going and start setting tack and get the ball rolling.
Did you ever think that this is what you'd be doing, or did you think you'd be doing something a little bit different?
No, I think this is what I wanted to do. When I quit riding races professionally, I was out here in California for the summer with another friend of mine, another horse trainer. And when I came up to Richard's barn to freelance work a horse for him, you could just tell it's different. It's really different atmosphere to be around, to be at Santa Anita in the first place, but then just to be in Richard Mandela's barn. It's a completely different ballgame than where I came from.
What's Richard like to work with?
Demanding, tough, he's just as hard on himself as he is on staff. I will say that. He's his own biggest critic. So he just expects you to do your very, very best every day. Don't come here half-hearted and expect to just, you know, kind of go through the motions of the job, because that's not the way it is. He wants your best every day.
What's the most rewarding part about doing what you do every single day and being around the horses?
Well, of course, winning races, but just watching them develop. Just when they come in when they're young, when they're 2, when they first come in the springtime and they've only been at the training center and now they're in the big city, and to see them blossom and learn, and it's my job to teach them all that stuff. So it's really rewarding when they make their first start, which is usually about Del Mar, is about the time we run our 2-year-olds the first time, but that's really the rewarding part of it.
You say it's your job to teach them. What's the key to being a good teacher?
Patience. Patience. You got to have patience, because they're just like people. Some people learn really quick and some don't. So you have to be patient about it. And you have to be consistent. Every day has to be the same. Whether it's straightening them out, reprimanding them for doing wrong things like trying to buck you off and stuff like that. But you have to be consistent. Horses are creatures of habit. So if you let them develop a bad habit and they do it 2 days in a row, they're going to try the 3rd day, the 4th day, and so on. So that's what my job is, to make sure they don't develop any bad habits.
You're wearing a ball cap with the name of one of your star pupils on it, and that's Beholder. And I know you were somebody who was very close to Beholder when she was racing. Tell me about that relationship.
Oh, she was something. She was a horse of a lifetime. You know, Omaha Beach, I'm sure, is that way for my friend Taylor, but she was so special. How a horse can come in and it's 2 and you breeze it 1/8 of a mile, and I said to one of my coworkers, I said, she's the one. She can do anything. She can do anything. And she didn't prove me wrong, did she?
No, she was pretty good.
Yeah, she's very good.
What's your favorite Beholder moment? Do you have one? Or maybe a couple?
Pacific Classic. Probably by far. I think I have never been on a horse that was as right and ready as she was going into that race. I mean, she was perfection. Every day was perfect. It was unbelievable.
What was it like when you finally had to say goodbye to Beholder and she left the barn? You come here the next day, she's not here. What was that like?
It was a little bit sad, you know. I didn't come that night when she loaded to go on the plane, because I thought that I would probably be too emotional, kind of like I am now just talking about it. But it was different. It was a lot of excitement for a lot of years. And to come down and see that stall empty right there by the office, that was a little saddening.
when you were in Kentucky for the Godolphin Awards, you got a chance to stop by the farm out at Spendthrift and see her. What was that moment like?
Oh, that was so cool. You know, and I don't think she recognized me at first. It took her a minute because, of course, she's always seeing me in my helmet. But once I got inside with her and, you know, got up close to her, then I think she remembered because she put her head down and closed her eyes. And it was really neat. And it was neat to see her babies, too. That was kind of cool. The next generation.
Yeah, so cool. And we'll look forward to seeing the Beholder babies. And we'll look forward to seeing more great ones from the Mandela Barn. And Janine Painter, our industry star of the week, a big part of the success here. Thank you, Janine. Appreciate it. And thank you for everything you do.
Thank you.
Well, a very deserving candidate for this week's Industry Star of the Week. As you heard me say, Janine was one of the finalists in the Godolphin Awards, which took place a few weeks ago here in Lexington, and somebody who's deserving of that award and certainly of the honor here this morning being our Industry Star of the Week. All right, busy second half of the program comes up next. It begins with owner Jeff Bloom. It's an interview you won't want to miss. Stay with me. I'll tell you all about it next, right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're into the final furlong. Code of Honor, Mucho Gusto, and Tacitus. Code of Honor has taken the lead, and Code of Honor and John Velasquez have won the run, Happy Travers.
Bowie's Hero from the outside. Diamond Oops, Bowie's Hero next shares to the inside. Bowie's Hero, Bowie's Hero wins the Shadwell Turf Mile.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
McKenzie is all out, but today belongs to Mongolian Groove. It's Mongolian Groove, wire to wire in the Oscar again under Abel Sedillo. McKenzie settles for second.
And Firenze Fire has taken the lead. Imperial Hint will try to battle back on the inside. Can he do it? Firenze Fire, Imperial Hint's coming back. These two coming down to the line. Very close. Did Imperial Hint come back? Oh, he's got so much heart.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence, rolling on this Breeders' Cup Saturday morning, the 10th time. That is a record that the Breeders' Cup has returned to Santa Anita Park in Arcadia, California. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program, head on back to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can listen to my interview with Hall of Fame jockey Lafitte Pinkai Jr. that was in the first half of the show. So, so good. Lafitte is always so good. But looking back on his Breeders' Cup memories, talking about some of the things that make a great rider great and set them above the rest. Lafitte did that with me earlier in the show. Hall of Famer Bob Baffert was part of the first half of the program as well, and our Industry Star of the Week that was Janine Painter, who works with Richard Mandela, and you heard that interview just a short time ago. This Saturday program, 9 Breeders' Cup races coming up later today. They begin with the Philly and Mare Sprint at 11:55 Pacific time this morning, 2:55 in the afternoon if you're on the East Coast. It all culminates with the $6 million Breeders' Cup Classic later this afternoon, 5:44 Pacific, 8:44 tonight, Eastern time, prime time. And we're going to have that coverage for you here on the network. Coverage begins 12 o'clock Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern today, Sirius 219, XM 201, the same channels you're listening to right now, also going to be carried on affiliates across the country and streamed worldwide at horseracingradio.net. You can do that on your computer, your tablet, your mobile device, whatever it is. And all that coverage later today presented by visitbarbados.org and Red Brand Fence. Now, in between that Philly and Mare Sprint and the Breeders' Cup Classic, you're going to see the nation's top older filly, Midnight Bisou, look to state her case for Horse of the Year honors in the Breeders' Cup distaff. The ultra-talented Sister Charlie is back to defend her title as the favorite in the Filly and Mare Turf and a ridiculously deep and competitive group in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. Features Matoli, Catalina Cruiser, Chancelot, and Imperial Hint. They are nearly, on paper anyways, inseparable. But don't count out some others in there. That is the Breeders' Cup Sprint. Maybe, I don't know, I won't say the best race of the day, but it could turn out to be. It's certainly the most interesting, in my opinion. I guess the Classic would be, too, without that standout older horse this year, McKenzie,
Told you heard from Bob Baffert. For those of you who are just tuning in, Bob Baffert was part of the first half of the program this morning. McKenzie, the morning line favorite. I don't know. McKenzie's not a super horse. He's good. He's really good on his day. But he's kind of somewhat in and out, at least when it comes to winning races. So we'll see. But that Breeders' Cup Sprint, man, that's a good, good race. Our poll question today, at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, threw this out at the top of the show. If you were only allowed to bet one Breeders' Cup race later today on this afternoon's program, which one are you choosing? You can only bet one. You get one shot at it to make a score. You're only allowed to bet one Breeders' Cup race on this Saturday program. Which one are you choosing? At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook is where you can weigh in and share your thoughts. Well, Jeff Bloom and Bloom Racing, you've heard him plenty here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. He's one of our colleagues. He has worked as an analyst on this network and as a reporter for the past several years. And Jeff is a guy that works tirelessly at his craft, and that is selling shares in, syndicating racehorses. And he travels all over the country to pick out what he feels are the best horses for his program. Well, he's got a good one in Midnight Bisou in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. Is she Horse of the Year? Well, that still remains to be determined. She has to get past the Breeders' Cup Distaff first, so let's not even put the cart before the horse when we're talking about Horse of the Year, but she's certainly in the discussion at this point. And Jeff took time to talk to me about that. He took time to talk about what this year has been like, going through an undefeated campaign with Midnight Bisou, who has become more than just a horse. She is a member of the Bloom Racing family, and he talked about that too. Here's my interview with owner Jeff Bloom. Enjoy. All right, brother. Midnight Bisou, Distaff, potential Horse of the Year on the line with a victory. Who knows? That could go either way, but come on, man. What's this ride been like for you? Unreal.
Did you see those chills going up the back of my neck when you were saying that?
I did.
I'm not going to lie to you. Every time somebody mentions that, it hits me like right between the eyes. I mean, the fact that we could be talking about our filly being a potential Horse of the Year, and rightly so. So it's, look, it's been a remarkable campaign and an amazing ride. Words are hard to identify that do justice to how incredible this experience has been. And also, just as a fan of the game, of the sport, and being involved in horse racing for as many years as I have, being able to witness up close as much as I'm able to do with Midnight Bisou, that in and of itself is enough right there. Just her elegance, her beauty, her talents, her professionalism. It's been a remarkable ride.
When you were working with Terry Finley at West Point, Thoroughbreds decided to go out on your own and start buying horses on your own and getting partners involved. In your wildest dreams, you'd ever imagine you'd be sitting here in a position like this?
Oh, of course, Mike. I predicted it right away. Look, you know, I had a good run with Terry over there, but, you know, I felt it was time for me to try to go out and do it on my own. And you hope, you know, and you dream, right? But I don't know that I necessarily pinpointed this kind of experience. You know, you hope you can be successful. You hope you can apply your talents and all the hard work that you've put into these things. And then it's kind of like, you know, one day you look up and you go, wow, look where I'm at. You know, so I adhere to that whole harder you work, the luckier you get mentality. I mean, I started that way with the guy that taught me how to ride, Muzzy Francis, 100 years ago. And so I'm very fortunate that I've had really good people supporting me. And, you know, you hope that things work out so that you can be successful. But, you know, who could ever dream to be in this position where I'm at right now? It's truly a wonderful thing.
What do you remember about the first time that you laid eyes on Midnight Bisou?
Now, it's funny that you asked that, because there were two horses at that particular sale that I felt like I really had to have. And look, when I make a decision that I'm going to buy a horse, obviously I want them. But Midnight Bisou was one of the two, and Snapper Sinclair was the other one. And you know, it's a long answer to why or what, but there were certain aspects of Midnight Bisou that I was drawn to. And, you know, look, there's a set of criteria that a horse needs to have in order for me to decide that's one of the ones I want. And she just had all these attributes that really knocked off all those check boxes, you know. And so in
like
particular,
what?
Well, so in particular, I could talk about the technical side of it, you know, the obvious stuff in terms of how a horse is put together, how balanced a horse is, which she is very balanced, how a horse moves, and the conformational side of it. But then there's the intangibles for me, which I really, you know, you can't teach, train, or really describe. It's not a black and white thing. It's a gut instinctual sort of feel that you have. And I was really just drawn to her eye, her intelligence, her presence, her overall demeanor. And when I'm going to buy a horse, I try to spend as much time around them as I can, hopefully at a two-year-old sale before, during, of course, and then after. And you just want to see how a horse reacts, how they respond, how they look at you, and how they carry themselves. And so it's not an exact science. And so you take all that, you throw it into a pot. You know, it's kind of like cooking something. You have all these different, you know, items, ingredients that you put into it, and you hope that you get the right recipe results. And fortunately, it worked out with her.
Was there a moment when she started her training, or maybe even during her breaking, whatever period it was, that was kind of that wow moment for you, and you said, you know what, we might actually have something here?
I like that question, Mike, because oftentimes, and you might have experienced this being around this game for as long as you have, you know, we have high expectations when we buy these horses and then we bring them into training. And it's funny when you talk to the trainers, you always go, hey, what do you think about this one? How's this horse doing? And usually the standard line is, well, when I get them up to 5'8", we'll know what we have. That's just the way it's always been. Midnight Bizu, really, from day one, from the day she shipped out, got into training, she just carried herself a certain way, Mike. She handled herself on the racetrack a different way. In fact, we're sitting here at Clocker's Corner speaking about this, and I remember Bill Spahr and I were standing over at the gap where horses, they have the auxiliary gate, just to teach horses about the starting gate. She was going to come on the track, and Bill goes, yeah, let's go over and kind of just show her the gate, let her look at it. And Camacho, her exercise rider, takes her over there, and there was no anxiety, no nervousness, no tension, nothing. And she walks over, and the gate crew came over to get her like they were going to walk her through, and she was being so good. So he goes, well, let's go ahead and bring her inside, and we'll just kind of quickly let her get up close to it. She's being so good. They take her inside the gate, and instead of just walking her through, she stops there. She stands. She's just looking around. They let her stand in the gate. They shut the doors. There she is standing in the gate. They open them up. She walks straight out. I mean, she's just always had this remarkable class about her and this appreciation for letting her soak in what's going on and then going on with it. So she, I mean, I'm not kidding you when I tell you, we felt like from day one she was going to be a special horse. And it's funny because I used to talk to the folks who bred her, Woodford, who I also bought her from at the two-year-old sales, and I would always tell them about this one particular filly from day one, you know, and I would continue, and she hadn't run yet, and they were always wondering, well, when's this horse going to run? When's this horse going to run that you're telling us so much about? I made those guys a lot of money by preventing their sale of Midnight Bizu's broodmare because they were going to sell her, and I finally convinced them that they better hold off because this filly of theirs, she's probably going to light up the board with her talents on the racetrack, and unfortunately it all worked out for everybody.
You mentioned trainer Bill Spahr, and I'm glad you brought his name up because he was an integral part in getting her career started. What kind of debt of gratitude do you owe to Bill Spahr for everything he did early on with her career?
Oh, look, Bill, you know, is an exceptional trainer, and I have a long-standing relationship with Bill. In fact, we won a race yesterday here at Santa Anita together, which was a lot of fun. Bill did a great job. He always applies an incredible amount of patience with these young horses. And look, when Bill got her, he said the same thing, you know, from the get-go. Like, this is a really special filly, Jeff. We're dealing with a really good horse here. So Bill and his entire team did a fantastic job laying the groundwork and the foundation and developing this filly and setting her up to be in a position to go ahead and do the things that she was doing. And, of course, you know, while Bill had her out here, we had an amazing run. Of course, we took the three-year-old filly stakes, capping it off with the Santa Anita Oaks. And and I'll never forget, Bill and I had kind of a quiet moment by ourselves when we were waiting for Midnight Bizu to come back, and we just sort of looked at each other and said, wow, we just won the Santa Anita Oaks, Bill. How about, you know, it was a pretty cool moment. And you know, Bill has, he's always the first one to congratulate me after every one of her races. First text I get is from Bill just saying, you know, some kind of funny emoji or GIF image and a major congratulations. So, yeah, he did an amazing job getting her ready for all this.
I'm talking with Jeff Bloom, Bloom Racing, Midnight Bizu going postered in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. Again, a potential Horse of the Year bid online if she can pull it off. Midnight Bizu has become more than just a horse to you and to your entire family and to all the connections. She's really like one of your kids. What's it like being around her?
Yeah, she. It's an emotional thing. You know, you get attached to all. Look, I'm an animal lover in and of itself, and these thoroughbred racehorses. I don't have to tell you what my appreciation is for these beautiful, majestic animals. But Midnight Bizou is in a different. She's in a different category. She has meant so much to us, not just in terms of the success that we've had on the racetrack with her, but what she allows us to do, the places we get to go, the stories we get to tell, the time we get to spend. And so for myself, my family, our friends, our partners, and even for the fans that we hear from Midnight Bizou, it's really just one of those things where it's just an outlier of fun and experiences that just take you to a whole different place, and you just don't want it to ever end. You really just don't.
I've been with you when she goes to the starting gate in a big race. We were there at Belmont when she won the grade one up there on the Belmont Stakes undercard, and you are intense when she's getting ready to go into the gate, and maybe some butterflies, some nerves, all of those things come into play. What are those moments like for you as she's getting ready to walk in the gate?
I've got all those feelings right now. It's best for me to stay far away from Midnight Bizou when it's getting close, because I don't want her to feel my tension or anxiety. Look, I tend to run hot, Mike, and you know, it's one of those things when you don't have control of a situation, it's a little bit harder, you know. And as a rider, as soon as you jump on their backs in the saddling paddock, all the nerves go away because you're on the back of the horse. For me, it's you know, that 15-minute wait for them to leave the saddling paddock and get into the starting gate. It's like a year. It's a year of anxiety, tension, nervousness, concern, all these, you know, thoughts going through your mind of how the race is going to play out. But at the same time, you know, it's a proud moment to look at it and just say, wow, we put all this together and she's done this for us and we're part of it. You just want everything to go right. And now, like in particular this year, you know, I said this, I think, two races back. This is the most nervous I've ever been for one of our races. Well, each successive race becomes the same thing. And I don't know how I could be any more nervous or anxious going into the Breeders' Cup Distaff this year when we've got an undefeated season on the line, potentially 8 wins in a row, capping off with another grade one in the World Championship Breeders' Cup with all the best of the best. It's pretty exciting.
After the Breeders' Cup Distaff, she's scheduled to enter the auction ring at Fasig Tipton in Lexington, the Night of Stars sale. Have you thought about that moment and what it's going to be like when you're standing there watching her sell and you have to finally say goodbye?
Only because you bring it up right now and force me to respond to that question, which is a fair question. I got to tell you, I really have done a good job of not thinking about it, which is hard to do. I'm fully aware of what the situation is and how little time is left in the rest of her campaign this year and what that means for her to go into that auction ring and potentially go off and continue to run, because she is a racing prospect. She's just not a broodmare prospect. I just want her to be in a safe environment that is deserving of a filly of her caliber, which we know that will be the case. This is all a business, and you have to be aware of that too. But quite honestly, Mike, I can tell you that I'm able to put it out of my mind enough to where I realize, be in the moment, enjoy what's in front of us, real time, embrace it, take advantage of it, and then just worry about what comes after that.
If she wins the Breeders' Cup Distaff, is she Horse of the Year?
Objectively, my opinion is yes. I mean, I don't know what more a horse would have to do. And also in comparison to what the competition is out there in that particular year. I mean, if you look at, she started this season off in January and hasn't looked back since. She's traveled all over the country. She's matched up against the best of the best. She's handled everything that's been thrown at her on multiple racetracks, multiple destinations, multiple distances, and to cap it off in the World Championship Breeders' Cup against the best of the best in that division, to me, is worthy of a Horse of the Year.
Her name, Midnight Bizou, I've always wanted to ask you this. Where on earth did that name come from?
So, you know, I'm trying to decide if I should come up with an interesting story or just give you what really happened there. So, interestingly enough, with Midnight Bizou, we had submitted a number of names. And as you are aware, sometimes those names do not get accepted, which was the case for her. And I remember I told the group, I said, look, this filly's getting close. We need to, like, have a name. She's going to be running soon. And Lori Allen threw Midnight Bizou out there. And when I saw it, it wasn't like, that's a great name. It was just like, we need a name. Put it in, and it got accepted. And then, of course, the rest is history. And all of us couldn't imagine ever a different name for this filly having such a special, perfect name.
Yeah, it's a, she's a special horse, and it's going to be a special day here at the Breeders' Cup. Brother, good luck, man. I'll be cheering for you.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right, and my thanks to Jeff Bloom for taking the time to visit and be very candid talking about some of the topics surrounding Midnight Bisou and what it's been like to go down this ride with her. An undefeated campaign thus far in 2019. Can she cap it all off later today in the Breeders' Cup Distaff? Well, if you can't make it to a TV, join us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You'll hear that race, as you will every Breeders' Cup race this afternoon, live with us here on HRRN. Going to get to a break. When I come back, we'll look back on Zenyatta 10 years ago today, that win in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and we'll do it with the man who called that race, the unbelievable Trevor Denman. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
An undefeated graded stakes winner on the track, Algorithms has sired over 70% winners from starters. His top runners include multiple stakes winner and grade 3 victor Recruiting Ready, multiple stakes winner and graded stakes performer Taylor Spirit, and juvenile stakes winner South Bend. In the Pennsylvania Derby, Algorithms notched his first grade 1 winner with a thrilling victory by Matt Wizard. In the ring, his juvenile sold up to $275,000 this year. Algorithms, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Smiling Tiger, the number one ranked stallion in California, is represented by two contenders in this year's Breeders' Cup. Multiple Grade 1 winner Spice Perfection and exciting two-year-old El Tigre Terrible. For a limited time, you can breed to California's leading sire for a special discounted rate of just $6,000 if you book your mare by November 3rd. So don't delay. Take advantage of this special offer on nationally ranked Smiling Tiger, Grade 1 winner, Grade 1 sire, standing at Harris Farms. For more information, go to SmilingTigerStallion.com.
Get ready for the Thanksgiving holiday with the Racing Feast, Wednesday, November 27th, featuring the $1 million Land of Enchantment Day at Zia Park with seven stakes races, headlined by the $250,000 Zia Park Derby and the $250,000 Zia Park Oaks. Free nominations for all the Land of Enchantment Day stakes close November 15th. For more information, call 575-492-7086 or go to ZiaParkCasino.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Recognized for raising and selling racehorses, Milridge has raised or sold 8 Breeders' Cup winners since 2000, including Oscar Performance, who is in his second year at stud at Milridge. Since 2000, Milridge has raised or sold 34 Grade 1 winners. That's nearly 2 per year for 18 years. Their consignment at Keeneland November includes broodmare offerings from Judmont Farms and their great female families, along with leading breeder George Strawbridge and his foundation-building families, all selling without reserve. Milridge, raising and selling racehorses.
I'm 3-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I listen to Horse Racing Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Zenyatta on the outside now strikes the front, and it's Zenyatta coming away. Music Note running on gamely. Coco Beach down at the rail. Zenyatta's going to come home to score. Undoubtedly now, a living legend. Zenyatta 9-for-9 wins it again. Zenyatta coming flying on the grandstand side. Gio Ponti on the inside. Summerbird is right there. This is unbelievable. Zenyatta, what a performance. One we'll never forget. Looked impossible, but it is Zenyatta, still unbeaten under Mike Smith.
One of the greatest race mares that this game has ever seen, Zenyatta, and boy, was she kind of a bit of a heart attack, right, on the racetrack. When she would start that run, she'd be far back, and she'd come flying. She did it in the 2008 Breeders' Cup Distaff, did it in the 2009 running of the Breeders' Cup Classic 10 years ago at Santa Anita. Mike Hennebaron in the backstretch, back with you here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Going to hear from the man who called those races. That is Mr. Trevor Denman. Talked to him about what that experience was like. And I'd have to say that call, one of the most iconic calls, the call of the Breeders' Cup Classic, that we've ever seen in the sport of thoroughbred racing. So I'll talk to Trevor about that coming up in just a few minutes. But want to remind you, don't miss any coverage of the fall racing, including the Breeders' Cup, like only Blood Horse can bring you. You can follow the races and news throughout the day on the popular Blood Horse Daily app, or have an email sent to you once a day, or listen on your Alexa device. Yeah, you can do that too. All of those are free. Go to bloodhorse.com/daily to learn more. All right, well, 10 years ago, it happened. Zenyatta beat the boys in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Many people weighed into our poll question on Twitter last weekend, saying that was their all-time favorite Breeders' Cup moment. I know it certainly is for a lot of you. Well, it was for Trevor Denman as well, and he took the time to talk to me about calling that race earlier this week. Announcer Trevor Denman has had the privilege of being associated with so many memorable moments in the sport of thoroughbred racing, but maybe none as memorable as the one that took place here at Santa Anita 10 years ago when Zenyatta stormed home to beat the boys in the Breeders' Cup Classic. And Trevor is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Trevor, good morning.
Good morning.
When somebody brings up Zenyatta and they bring up that race from 10 years ago, what are some of the first things that come to mind for you?
Wow, well, that is undoubtedly, categorically, the most exciting race I've ever called. And I've been calling races for, 50 years now. You know, people always ask me, what's the best race you've ever watched? And it used to be the 89 Preakness. That was with Sunday Silence and Easy Goer. You know, there was a magnificent race, and it was my best all along until Zenyatta came along. I mean, you just couldn't beat that race. She had everything going for her. She was a filly against the boys. It was a Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Classic, you know, probably the best race in the world or one of. And her style of running just made it. She comes from so far back. You know, it's one thing to jump out the gate, go to the lead, and win all the way around. Hey, the point is to get from the starting gate to the finishing line, no matter how you do it. However, having said that, the come-from-behind horses are just so much more exciting. And that particular race that day, wow, I mean, what a race. At the 3/8 pole, I think I can't quote it verbatim, but something to the effect of, Zenyatta wins this one, she's a superstar, something like that, because basically she wasn't going to win. She was too far back, giving too many lengths to too good a horses. You know, you can do that in a Grade 3 or a lesser race, but Breeders' Cup Classic, no, you're not going to catch them. And then I remember her turning for home, and she started to pick it up just a little, and you're thinking, well, she might hit the board, but that's it. She's gone from a great horse to a very good horse. And then all of a sudden, wow, I think it was just inside the 8th pole, maybe even a little closer to the 16th pole. I mean, she just kicked into another gear, and I just got so lucky with that call that I happened to spout out the word unbelievable, which was like a four-syllable word, unbelievable. And it was almost like she was striding to those words. You know, obviously she wasn't, but that's what it looked like. And that last 16th of a mile, just, you know, mind-boggling. So that was undoubtedly the best race I've seen.
Yeah, that call, this is unbelievable. So many people are, you know, when they think about Zenyatta, that's the first thing that comes to their mind. And for you, that has to be pretty special to be associated with that.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Absolute privilege. I mean, you know, and it had to be that day in that race. If it had been, I don't want to belittle any races, so I won't name another race, but any famous race, it wouldn't have been the same, except the Kentucky Derby, it wouldn't have been the same as the Breeders' Cup Classic. That was the race she needed to do that, and like her whole career, she came through.
As a track announcer, Trevor, can you ever plan on coming out with something so iconic and you know, capturing that moment the way you did? Can you plan that, or is it something that just has to come naturally?
Wow, it's a trait of mine, and I've said it, you know, since I started calling races. I never, N-E-V-E-R, never pre-plan a call. It doesn't come out right. It has to be spontaneous as far as I'm concerned. And I got extremely lucky with that one, not to talk about me, we'd rather talk about Zenyatta. But I just got so lucky that it was spontaneous, and you could tell it was spontaneous. You know, if I'd planned and here comes so-and-so or that, it just wouldn't have gone down the same. I think the spontaneity of the call really helped me.
I remember that we were broadcasting that race on radio, and we were sitting here at Santa Anita, and the whole day, the buildup to that moment was so intense, and we were so focused on that particular race. As you were preparing to call the Breeders' Cup that year, 10 years ago, what was your preparation like, and were you totally focused on Zenyatta? Can you do that in a big event like the Breeders' Cup?
No, not totally focused, you know. I mean, I think any time there's a big horse in a race, you kind of lean towards focusing on that. I use the example of Tiger Woods is playing in a golf tournament. You know, they focus more on Tiger Woods than anybody else because that's where the most people have their interest on any favorite, but particularly a horse like Zenyatta. And I just repeat, she was a filly going against the boys, a dramatic horse. I mean, She could work the crowd, not to be too anthropomorphic about her, but she worked the crowd, no doubt about it, you know, with that little pawing of that right front foot, and she was almost telling them, come on, lift it up a little, I've just won a big race. She talked to the crowd, so she was something extra special. I mean, most horses are not tuned into the crowd, but she definitely was, so she was extra special. So she was definitely the star of the day. She was the Tiger Woods of that Breeders' Cup. And we focused on her a little more than the others, but, you know, you can't be biased when you're a track announcer. I've been biased exactly once in my entire career, and that was when Bill Shoemaker had his last ride. I think I said something like, come on, Bill, you know, I wanted her to win, because anybody who didn't want Bill Shoemaker to win his last ride, well, I think you need to look into yourself. So that was the only time I've ever been biased was Bill Shoemaker. So you can't be biased towards Zenyatta, but you're certainly keeping an eye on her.
Outside of that Breeders' Cup Classic, is there another Zenyatta performance or another Zenyatta moment that always stands out to you?
You know, the funniest one I think of, not particularly who wins, you know, she won so many good races, it would be difficult to isolate one, but I never forget the first time she went in the gate. I mean, she was huge. She was looking over the top of the gate, not between it. And this little horse, just by sheer chance, a little horse moved in the gate next to her. And I swear she turned her head and looked at him and said, like, or her, you're running against me? It was like a little Welsh pony running against Zenyatta. And again, she wasn't, but that look she gave that horse was so ironic because it was like, you're running against me. She knew she was good, let's put it that way.
That's great. Do you ever, Trevor, go back and watch that classic and relive that moment?
You know, I never listen back to my calls. It's a funny thing. I think a lot of people say that. Your voice sounds very funny to you. You know, it doesn't sound good. So I won't use the word never, but I very, very, very seldom listen to one of my race calls. It's very close to never. I just don't like it. To go back and watch that race for a few years after the race, yes. I mean, it's stimulating. You still get goosebumps just to see her come running. I watch it without the sound. And that last 16th of a mile is just mesmerizing. So, yes, I did. I haven't for a while now, obviously, but I did.
Well, Trevor, on behalf of racing fans around the world, we listen to your calls, and we go back and watch them and listen. And you captured that moment perfectly, as you have on so many other occasions, and really appreciate you taking a few minutes to visit with me here on the program this morning. And all the best. We'll look forward to hearing more Trevor Denman coming up soon.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate you giving me the call.
Well, you'd be hard-pressed to find a more passionate fan of the sport of thoroughbred racing. Trevor, as you heard him say in that interview, has been doing this a very long time, still has that passion. And that moment, boy, did he capture it beautifully with his call. And amazing to me that you heard him say he never scripts a call. He doesn't premeditate things like that. That just came out for him, and I'm sure he's pretty glad that it did. That's Trevor Denman here on HRN. My thanks to Trevor for spending a few minutes with me. We'll get to another break. When I come back, I'll tell you about the biggest upset in the history of the Breeders' Cup. It took place right here beneath those San Gabriel Mountains, and you'll hear from trainer Mark Cassie looking ahead to his Saturday horses. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, all presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms. Castleton Lions is proud to introduce precocious multiple graded stakes winner Protonico for the 2019 breeding season. A Son of Giants Causeway out of an AP Indy mare, Protonico rolled to a 12 and 3 quarter length victory in his debut as a 2-year-old before taking the Grade 3 Smarty Jones and Grade 3 Discovery Handicap at 3, followed by an ultra game win in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba at Churchill Downs in his 4-year-old season. Protonico joins a Castleton Lions stallion roster that includes multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and Blue Bloods sprinter Justin Phillip. Gio Ponti is the sire of Eclipse champion Dre Fong, Canadian Classic winner Sir Dudley Diggs, and stakes winners Miss Technicality and America's Tale. While Justin Phillip is represented by exciting stakes-winning filly Safe to Say and stakes place runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing. Protonico, Gio Ponti, and Justin Phillip standing at Castleton Lions.
Racing fans, don't miss the biggest day of the year, Breeders' Cup Classic Day at spectacular Santa Anita Park. Admission gates open on Saturday at 8 a.m. and first race post time for a tremendous 12-race card is at 10 o'clock. We'll have 9 Breeders' Cup races, including the $2 million Distaff, and the day will reach a crescendo with the $6 million Breeders' Cup Classic. Come join us for a day you'll never forget. Walk-up general admission tickets are available for both the grandstand and infield, so don't miss out. Santa Anita, transforming tradition.
Curlin, the leading yearling sire by average. The sire of a $4.1 million sales-topping colt in September, a $1.5 million Saratoga sales-topper, and a $3.65 million Gulfstream sales-topper. In 2019, Curlin is the sire of 10 greatest stakes winners with progeny earnings of more than $10 million. The number one sire of million-dollar sale yearlings. Curlin, standing at Hillendale.
Racing at Mahoning Valley is off and running with racing 4 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday, plus a special Friday card on November 29th after Thanksgiving. Monday, November 25th is highlighted by the $250,000 Steel Valley Sprint for three-year-olds at 6 furlongs and the $75,000 Hollywood Gaming Mahoning Valley Distaff. Post time, 12:45 p.m. Learn more at HollywoodMahoningValley.com.
Elite Sales is the number one consigner of horses of racing age and broodmare prospects. Their consignment at the Fasig Tipton Knight of Stars sale includes 5 individual Grade 1 winners, 5-time Grade 1 winner Midnight Bisou, Separation of Powers, Mia Mischief, Secret Spice, and Wildcat. At Keeneland November, Elite Sales is offering 2-time Grade 1 winner Spice Perfection, Grade 3 winner and Grade 1 placed Elysia's World, and Grade 2 winner Grade 1 placed Rimska in Book 1. Learn more at EliteRaceSales.com. Adina Springs is home to 2 of the most exciting young stallions in Kentucky, Point of Entry and Mucho Macho Man. A 5-time Grade 1 winner, Point of Entry is the number one third crop sire by A Runner Index. In 2019 alone, the heir to Dynaformer's legacy is the sire of UAE Derby winner Puska Parfait, Breeders' Cup Mile contender Admission Office, and graded place 2-year-old Tuggle. Breeders' Cup Classic champion Mucho Macho Man is the leading second crop sire by Black Type Wins, led by Del Mar Grade 2 winner Mucho Unusual, and the incredibly tough and consistent Mucho Gusto,
who has more lifetime graded wins or placings than any three-year-old in his crop. Point of Entry and Mucho Macho Man are the latest stallions to carry on the classic bloodlines and classic performance tradition at Edina Springs. Call Ken Wilkins or Donald Wells today about 2020 seasons and visit AdinaStallions.com.
Hi, this is Steve Buttleman, the official bugler at Churchill Downs in the Kentucky Derby, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
They come to the top of the stretch. Azude is still in with the chance in behind Horses. Best Pal is only four lengths from the lead. Pleasant Tango is coming hard. Kissing Chris is also right there. Arcang is coming in between Horses. And it's still for Trendle with an onslaught of challengers. Here comes Arcang. A huge upset looming here as Arcang comes flying on the outside. And he runs by for Trendle. Kissing Chris. Here is Arcang to win it. And an absolute shocker. He's 99-1 in the $3 million Classic. And Bertrando, the favorite, is defeated in the final yards. Absolutely shocking and impossible victory, paramutually speaking.
Arcang with that huge upset in the 1993 Breeders' Cup Classic. The tote board showed 99-1. 133-1 is what the official odds were on Arcang. And you heard Tom Durkin in the call going with Arcang. Well, keep in mind, at that time in 1993, even jockey Jerry Bailey, who was aboard, said he wasn't sure how to pronounce the horse's name, but it didn't matter when he crossed the finish line. He was happy to be aboard that day. Come to find out later, it is Arcang, and Arcang, the biggest upset in Breeders' Cup history. Trainer Mark Cassie probably hoping that there won't be an upset in the Breeders' Cup Mile later today when he sends out one of the favorites, Got Stormy, a filly taking on the boys. And the fillies have had plenty of luck in that particular race over the years. A name like Goldikova is the first one that pops into my head. He's also hoping that maybe there will be an upset in the Breeders' Cup Classic later today when he sends out War of Will, who is not going to be among the favorites, albeit he is a classic winner. He won the Preakness Stakes at Pimlico earlier this season. So a lot of storylines, and Mark Cassie, as usual, here at the Breeders' Cup, is front and center. And earlier this week, he did take the time to sit down and visit with Bobby Newman and Megan Devine on our Breeders' Cup Countdown show, and here's what Mark had to say.
You seem to have horses all different parts of this continent, and you obviously have a fabulous team, but special on days like this coming up.
Well, you know what? Every year, it's kind of like Christmas. So as soon as one Breeders' Cup's over, we're aiming for the next one. And it's always our goal. And to say that, you know, we have six here. And you know, with legitimate chances. And just be, you know, this is the Olympics. This is what we this is what we strive for. So, yes, I'm extremely proud of our horses and our team.
You've had such an amazing year. You won this year's Preakness with War of Will. Then you came back and won the Belmont with Sir Winston. I mean, this has been a banner year for you and your entire team. What has it felt like around the barns leading up to another big weekend?
Well,
you more confidence, more pep in your step?
I don't think so. I always, if you know me very well, I have pep in my step all the time.
I believe it.
No, I don't think so. Those things that you spoke about are nice, you know, winning the Preakness, winning the Belmont. Sometimes I forget about that and I have to think back.
We'll remind you.
Yeah, but you know what? We're focusing on the
absolutely
on the Breeders' Cup. So
War of Will has been out on the track. I mean, he just looks – he is a unbelievable physical specimen.
You know what? He's just wonderful in every way. He's got a great mind. He's a beautiful horse.
Yeah.
Big pedigree. You know, his races this year, there's been some disappointments, and then of course there's been some highs.
Mm-hmm.
We felt like we had him at tip top shape for the Kentucky Derby, and unfortunately, you know, things happen.
Yeah.
And then for him to come back and to be able to win the Preakness was very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. You're going to add blinkers to him for the first time. Why that decision?
Well, you know what? He just seems to not focus like he was. I should say like he was. He's done that before. I thought his non-focus probably cost him winning the Bourbon at Keeneland last year. And he kind of looks like that he'll move up and he's going to pounce sometimes. And then, you know, he starts wondering. You'll see if you watch, his ears will go up sometimes. And mm-hmm. and my concern was I don't want him to be speed crazy. But we put him on him, and in fact, he relaxes a little bit more mm-hmm. with him on. And but he does train well with him. So, look, he's got to run the race of his life.
That's right.
And we're trying to tweak every little way we can.
Gary Barber owns both War of Will and Got Stormy, so I'm sure that he's getting a little antsy for the Breeders' Cup coming up. Got Stormy has had a brilliant 2019. She's been a model of consistency. 6 starts this year, 3 wins, 2 seconds, and a third. Last time out, a huge effort in defeat facing the boys in the Woodmine Mile. She's going to be one of the favorites in the Breeders' Cup Mile this Saturday. How's she doing coming into this race, and what's she been doing since we last saw her?
You know, I thought her race in the Woodbine Mile was super. I knew going in that it was a tall task for her. Her strong suit is the ability to maneuver. She likes sharper turns. She's going to love the sharper turns here at Santa Anita. She's going to like the harder turf course. And those are two things she didn't get at Woodbine, but it was... I had to make a decision, and that was, do we go to Woodbine and know that it's going to be tall, it's going to be a tough task, or do we wait and run in the First Lady? My concern was, a lot of times at Keeneland in the fall, it'll rain a lot, mm-hmm. and if it was soft, I wouldn't want to run her, and then I would have been without
right.
two race, you know, with any race. So I opted to go to the Woodbine Mile. It's been good to us. We won with World Approval and Teppan off of it. So we tried it, and I was proud of her. And I told Gary right after the race, okay, she's ready. They have to beat her.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting. The turf course was labeled good for the Woodbine Mile, but the final time for the mile was 1:32.3. Now, obviously, that's a one-turn mile, not a two-turn mile. You don't usually see a turf course rated good, and they run that quickly. But you're saying there was some give to the ground.
Well, it's interesting. Before the race, I took Tyler out, and I said, look, Tyler, look where these horses have been running. Mm-hmm. This is where you need to try to be.
Mm-hmm.
And because Woodbine does something that I've been after him for, and I hate to get after them, but they like to leave. They put the rail out, similar now, where it's about 3 or 4 pass out, and they don't run on it for a month.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take it down, if you can get down to the rail,
mm-hmm.
it's a big advantage. After the race, I took Tyler and I showed him the footprints of the winner, and he barely penetrated the ground.
Right.
And where we were at, we were taking 3-inch divots out.
Yeah.
And I said, do you see what I'm talking?
That's
you
the
know,
difference.
And we talked about it. He just said, I tried to get there. Because we had that conversation. So they ran fast, but there was definitely some cut in the ground. Maybe not on the rail, but there was cut on the ground. Yeah.
I mean, she has just been so unbelievable, really, throughout her entire career. But I think it's interesting in a race like that. Obviously, you have a mix of female-male horses. A lot of times here in the U.S., we don't see that as much. But for you, as a trainer, you've certainly had some success with it between her and between Teppan. What is it about horses like that, those female horses, that gives you the confidence to run them against their male counterparts?
Well, I think when you look at the numbers, you look at the competition, and you say, hey, you know what? They deserve a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never, you know us, we don't back down very often.
Definitely.
I mean, you know, the problem is the old saying, if you're afraid to step off first, you can't steal second.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we get thrown out many times, but we also steal a lot of bases. So, I don't back down from challenges.
You put Tyler Gaffalione aboard, who's a relatively, you know, young up-and-coming rider. I feel like he's been around for a while, but you won the Preakness with him this year. He gets the ride on Got Stormy. For him as a rider, what is it about him and his talents, his mind, maybe that's really attracted you to him to give him the chances that you have?
Well, I just think he's a really good rider. He's got a great attitude. strong rider,
yeah,
very strong finisher. And he thinks. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I keep saying that he's an up-and-coming star, but that's not right because he is a star.
He's here. He is a star.
And he loves Scott Storm. He loves Warwill, too, but he loves Scott Storm.
Yeah.
In weather like this, do you need to walk the turf course before Friday and Saturday when it's hasn't rained in weeks and it's going to be perfect conditions?
I knew two things, and I said that right after the Woodbine Mile. We're going to get a fast turf course. It's going to be hard, and I know that we're going to like those turns. So
I'm not doing,
there's just so many things that can happen, especially in turf racing. Mm-hmm. But if you look at our prior success with Teppan and World Approval, they had the ability to stay close and, you know, adapt to the pace. And that's what got Stormy has too. So that's important. When you have a deep closer or something like that, you need things to go your way, where a lot of times with a Got Stormy or Teppan, they make their own luck mm-hmm. and race.
Mark, we really appreciate you joining us this morning. You're going to have a busy Friday and Saturday. Some of the stars of the barn, Got Stormy and War of Will, we'll be seeing them on Saturday. Best of luck to you and your owners.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks so much.
Fun stuff, as always, from trainer Mark Cassie, talking about his chances with Got Stormy and War of Will later today. You remember there was a time, as I was listening to that interview, I was thinking about that. Mark Cassie was regarded at one point as maybe the best trainer in the sport, never to have won a Breeders' Cup race. Remember he was 0 for 20-something with his starters? I remember visiting with him at Keeneland in 2015 on one of the countdown shows, and we were talking about that. He's always used to love when I would bring that up. And he was reflecting on that, and now here he is with all of these Breeders' Cup victories. It's like you break through with the first one, and they just continue to flow like water, and they're doing that for Mark. And, hey, he's got a couple of good shots today. All the best to Mark Cassie coming up on this Saturday afternoon program. Going to get to one final break. I'll come back and tell you what's ahead this afternoon and wrap this one up for you. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home.
Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Grade 1 winning millionaire Preservationist. The exceptionally talented son of Arch boasts Foundation mares Courtly D and Manad on the top and bottom of his blue-blooded pedigree. On the racetrack, he was one of 2019's best, taking the Grade 1 Woodward at Saratoga and Historic Suburban at Belmont Park.
And Preservationist has won the Suburban by 4.5 lengths over Catholic Boy and Pebble.
Preservationist, another exciting addition to the Airdrie Stud Stallion roster. Think about it.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
Shadwell Farm, home to world-class stallions, presents two young stars. Mo Heyman, undefeated two-year-old, multiple graded stakes winner at 2 and 3. A dazzling son of Tappan, winner of his first 5 career starts, 4 in graded stakes. Grade 1 winner, Tamer Coos, winner of the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. This son of Spitestown was a top international miler that earned over $1.8 million. Shadwell Farm, building speed for the future.
Mark your calendar for the Holiday Racing Festival at Penn National on Wednesday, November 27th. The card features 3 outstanding stakes races, the $200,000 Fabulous Strike Stakes, the $100,000 Swatara Stakes, and the $100,000 Blue Mountain Futurity. Plus, there's a special $3,500 holiday cash giveaway. First post is 6 p.m. Eastern, with the stakes included in the early pick 4, comprised of races 1 through 4. Go to hcpn.com for details and rules.
Power. Taprit is still there. Master Plan is gaining. Master Plan at Taprit. Taprit still in front. Master Plan too late. Taprit will do it.
Passion.
It's Taprit. He makes another step forward on his way to Churchill.
Well done, young man. We'll report home 4 lengths to the good.
Performance.
Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish Warcry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Gainesway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling turned classic winner and millionaire. Following a precocious stakes-winning two-year-old campaign, Taprit set a new stakes record in the Grade 2 Tampa Bay Derby before capturing the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes in his three-year-old season. Among the best-bred sons of Taprit ever to enter stud. Out of Grade 1 Spinaway Stakes winner and multiple graded stakes producer, Appealing Zofie. Taprit, standing for $12,500 at Gainesway.
Power. Passion, performance, you know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, back with you here on the Equine Forum on HRRN, ready to wrap up this Breeders' Cup Saturday edition of the program. Want to thank everybody for being with me here over the course of the past 2 hours, and don't forget to join us later this afternoon, noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, as we embark upon 6 hours of consecutive Breeders' Cup coverage. We've done this for you, well, let's see, since 2007. That is 13 consecutive years that the Horse Racing Radio Network has been the exclusive radio partner of the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Last year, listeners in 47 countries made us their home for Breeders' Cup Week coverage, and can't thank you enough for all of your support here of HRRN. Really appreciate you listening. And our thanks to all of our sponsors, too, including visitbarbados.org and Red Brand Fence, both of those integral parts of making our coverage possible. Couldn't do it without them and without the support of all of our sponsors who have been with us throughout the week and throughout the year. Huge day. Begins with the Filly and Mare Sprint. That's the first race of the afternoon, 11:55 a.m. Pacific time, 2:55 p.m. Eastern time. That's 11:55 a.m., I should say, Pacific time. I'll get these times straight. The Turf Sprint follows that one as race number 5. The Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile is race 6. Then we turn our attention to the Filly and Mare Turf, which is race 7. Race 8 is the Breeders' Cup Sprint. The Breeders' Cup Mile comes up as race number 9. Race 10 is the Breeders' Cup Distaff, followed by the Breeders' Cup Turf. And, of course, the $6 million Breeders' Cup Classic wraps it all up right around 5:44 Pacific time, 8:44 Eastern this afternoon. Poll question today was, well, if you were only allowed to bet one Breeders' Cup race this afternoon on this Saturday program, which one are you choosing? And I got to tell you, for me, I think I have to pick the Breeders' Cup Mile, the Turf Mile, because that's a race that is so wide open. And the way I like to play the races is I like to play trifectas. I'm not great at putting together multi-race tickets like pick threes and pick fours, although I have hit one good pick four in my life, but I think about all the ones I've played and lost, and I'm out after the first leg. That's very discouraging. For me, what works for me and for my betting style, and everybody's different, I like to play trifectas, and I like to take one, two, or maybe three, depending on the size of the field and, you know, how much you can afford to do, but one or two horses on top, maybe three horses or four horses for second, and I love to hit the all button in third, especially in a race like the Breeders' Cup Mile, where you've got a big field, you have several long shots, and you have a lukewarm favorite at what, 7-2 ballpark? Is that where we are in that race, the Breeders' Cup Mile? It's a great race to do something like that, and you just hope that you get that kicker in third. Now, where you get messed up is if you get the first two and you get the favorite that runs third. You can still get a good price depending on the price of the first two, but you're better off, always better off, getting that big bomb in third, 40, 50, 60 to 1. And you never know. In these races, we say it every year with the Breeders' Cup, you have really, really good grade one horses, grade two horses, really good race horses that are going to be, maybe for the first time in their life, 20 or 30 to 1. That's why this is such a great betting event. But if you're only allowed to bet one Breeders' Cup race this afternoon, which one are you choosing? Head over to Horse Racing
hrsradio.net for the podcast of this show, and head over to @HRN on Twitter to weigh in on that poll question. You can also do that on Facebook, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and follow us on Instagram, Horse Racing Radio Network on Instagram. My thanks to all of the guests who took the time to make this show possible. Lafitte Pinkai Jr., that interview, if you missed it in the first half of the show, I strongly urge you to go back to our website and check that one out. Lafitte Pinkai Jr. was fantastic looking back on his Breeders' Cup victories and other memorable moments. Hall of Famer Bob Baffert was part of the first half of the show, too, as he was with Bobby and Megan on the Breeders' Cup Countdown show this week. Jeff Bloom, really candid interview talking about Midnight Bisou. Another good listen. Head back and check that one out. Trevor Denman, looking back on the Breeders' Cup Classic 10 years ago, 2009, Zenyatta beating the boys. And, of course, Mark Cassie as well toward the end of the program, talking about War of Will and God Storming. Been a very busy show again. Back this afternoon with our entire broadcast team live from Santa Anita, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern. You can listen right here, Sirius 219, XM 201, affiliates across the country, and you can stream us, as always, worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Well, been a lot of fun to have you with me this morning. Happy Breeders' Cup. Good luck to everybody out there. For my producer, Lee Delapina, and our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios, for all of our guests, and for Chauncey, Sean C., for handling all of our social media for me here this morning. Our thanks to them. Thanks for listening. And as always, hey, let's try to make it 3 in a row. Go Steelers.